the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Hines and John Wilkerson. We've got a lot to get to between now and the end of the program at 7 o'clock. And we look forward to being joined by our good friend Mike Dettillier a little bit later. But right now, it is a golden attaboy that hangs in the balance. It's our nightly trivia challenge, your chance to showcase your mad trivia skills with a sports fix at 6. Jimmy, what's the question tonight?
Tim Duncan was recently selected for induction into the Basketball Hall of Fame. He had a tremendous NBA career. He's one of only three NBA players to win 1,000 regular season games. Name the other two. Tim Duncan, one of only three NBA players to win at least 1,000 regular season games. Name the other two.
656-9900, *990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Again, Jimmy, if you would, repeat the question.
Tim Duncan, recently selected for induction into the Basketball Hall of Fame, one of three NBA players to win at least 1,000 regular season games. Name the other two. One was on the West Coast primarily. One was on the East Coast primarily.
So again, 656-9900 to give us your shot at tonight's trivia. The bar set pretty high, and let's see if we can't get a winner today. 656-9900, 656-9900.
Obviously,
we have a guesser yet, Sam? Go ahead, Jimmy.
I was going to say with Duncan, he played many years, obviously. You have to have done that. And so there are a couple of players that I think are pretty well known in the NBA that played into their 40s. Both of them did. So that would be a pretty good hint. Also, both of them were tall like Tim Duncan. Maybe that'll help somebody.
Let's go to Tyler, who's up first. Hello, Tyler.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Robert Parrish.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. That's it. I thought we were going to be here a little while.
Yeah.
Did
all we were waiting on was for Tyler to get through.
Yeah, exactly. We were having trouble getting anybody to come through, and Tyler comes through. So that's good work. It is Jabbar. It is Parrish. Of course, Jabbar played most of his career with the Lakers. He started out with the Bucks. Some people might not remember, Robert Parrish started his career with Golden State. He was there for about, 4 years maybe? And then he got traded to Boston, and that's where he had his greatest seasons. But Jabbar, Parrish, Duncan, the only three players in the history of the NBA to win at least 1,000 regular season games.
Outstanding work, Tyler. Well done. Hang on the line, because not only do you get the golden attaboy for being correct with your trivia guess, but also you have this audio reward that is now yours and yours alone.
I was styling out there like a champion. Yeah, sit back with your feet up and watch the champion in action.
I am truly the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be.
There is no one that does it better than the Macho Man Randy Savage.
But to be the man, you gotta beat the man. And I'm saying, woo, right here in Nashville, Tennessee, pal, I'm the man.
You're looking at the next WWF champion, and that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
Well done, Tyler. One and done for tonight's Sports Fix at 6, and we will have another question for you tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. And, Jimmy, as we talked about some with Vince Ferrara, with Major League Baseball and the plan potentially to be back in action in the month of May, there was also with concern from caller Jay about whether or not college football can come back without there being a vaccine in place. Notre Dame's athletics director Jack Swarbrick said that he doesn't want to he doesn't want to see a game without fans. And just to put a little more background behind his remarks, it's just the pomp and pageantry that is college football, with cheerleaders, marching bands, alumni, you name it. And so I can understand a college AD saying that they want it to be the full experience for game days, Saturdays. But I also think that we also, in more of a likelihood, will face something that's unlike anything we've ever seen before, because that's what everyone is going through now, something we have never seen before.
Well, I would agree with him. I would prefer to see games played with fans and the pomp and pageantry and the cheerleaders and the band, etc. But extraordinary times call for extraordinary measures. And if I have a choice of no football because the fans can't go, or football without fans, I'm taking football without fans. I would prefer that. At least it gives us something to watch. It gives the athletes something to do. Is it unlikely that could happen? I guess it is unlikely. Who knows? But I would prefer that. If I've got a choice, that's what I would prefer, to play football even if fans cannot attend.
Yeah, we will see what happens. But I also wonder, as we talked about with Brett McMurphy, and do you think that we would see college football games without the students being back on campus?
Probably not, because it's going to be hard for chancellors and presidents to say, students, you can't come on campus for safety reasons, but you football players, y'all go out and hit each other and slobber on each other and sweat on each other. So I'm going to say if they don't allow students to take classes, that it's unlikely we will have college football.
Yeah, and also you wonder, with football, of course, being so vital to all of college athletics, simply for the fact that for many and most institutions, it is the breadwinner, the primary breadwinner, you would also have to wonder exactly whether or not that would be the same in place for Tennessee volleyball, Tennessee soccer, cross country. You could look at the other programs that also work in the fall, and I just wonder if what it's like in terms of those programs as well, as we've heard several times now from Jeremy Pruitt.
Yeah, and I guess the thing is that in my opinion, we don't have to make that decision now. Let's see where we are in another month or so. That's why I don't want to rule anything out. There'll be some very difficult decisions that have to be made, and we will see whenever. And I don't know the appropriate time. I think when you talk about college football, can you wait till June 1st? Maybe so. So other things need to be resolved probably by May the 1st, but it's just hard to really project when's the best time to make some of these decisions.
Oh, no doubt. And the fact that good or bad, nothing's going to be settled on April 7th about things that are going to perhaps happen late July, August, September, whether it be just getting back on campus, teams working out, different things like that. So we'll just simply continue to hope for the very best for all involved and everything that's going on now. And if everybody sticks to the plan, that means that it's much easier to get back closer to what is normality. We'll get a break. When we return, we look forward to being joined by Mike Dettillier. That's next as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.
When special guests call in to 99.1 The Sports Animal, you hear them on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, stanleyfence.com.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, and it's been far too long since I've had the pleasure of being involved in a conversation with a longtime friend of Sports Talk who joins us now on the Stanley Fencing Gates Hotline, and that is Mike Dettillier. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you.
Hopefully you and yours are safe and sound down in Louisiana.
Yeah, it's it really has spread pretty fast here. It's not unusual. It didn't surprise me. We live in a little bit older community. They got cash, more than the normal community, but it's a little older community and with some underlying issues for many people. And so once it spread, you know, it was pretty quickly. And, you know, also we had the Mardi Gras season here. So, you know, all of that all adding up, it didn't surprise me that we'd be hit pretty hard with it. And over the last 10 days, I've had 7 people that I know that have passed away with it.
Wow.
I mean, that's you know, from this area. And so it has spread pretty hard. Again, a number of people of a certain age, once they get it and it attacks your respiratory system, it's really difficult. Actually, my state representative is in a hospital not far from me. He's a little younger than me. He's 53. And he's been on a respirator now over a week. And so he's fighting it, fighting a good fight. But looks as though, you know, the news is, I guess you could say, a little bit better for this area. But it has really spread bad in New Orleans and southeast Louisiana tremendously.
Sorry to hear that. Mike, last night I watched, not all of it, but I watched a lot of the New Orleans Saints game against the Falcons 2006. It was the first game played in the Dome, and I guess since 2004, because of Hurricane Katrina and Rita. You covered that game, and I think you told me that last night was the first time you had a chance to watch it. What was your impressions of that Saints game against Atlanta?
I'd never seen it on television. I saw the game from the press box, but, you know, I'd never saw the game, you know, like that. And so it was interesting, to say the least, because the emotion of that day was pretty high. You know, and what had happened in 2005, and you're right, we had actually got hit with 3 storms in the area, knock on wood for me, even though I live about 55 miles south and west of New Orleans. I was out of electricity twice for about a week, but that was the worst I had. I didn't have any water damage. I didn't have any wind damage, nothing. Involved with it, but I just saw so many areas had been hit, and it was just one body blow after another. And to have Kathleen Blanco, who was the governor at that time, in a controversial decision on a lot of people's part, did not want her sinking money back into the Superdome. And she made the decision that she wanted that to be the focal point for the state to return and kind of a showcase that we were going to, you know, Louisiana, New Orleans, everybody was going to be back on their feet. And I think it sort of inspired everybody. It took your mind off of if you had issues of maybe losing a loved one or losing your home and possessions in your home and everything. And so it was a huge night. I do know it was an emotional night for so many people. To watch it again is almost surreal. And I text Sean. I told him he looked like he was back in college again. He's a lot younger looking Sean Payton today. And he told me, I'm not going to tell you exactly what he told me back, but you know, it was about youth too. And so we, you know, you see that, and to see Steve Gleason, you know, because I worked with Steve for a little while before the ALS set in. Excuse me. And he's such a good guy, you know. And he actually played for my next-door neighbor in NFL Europe, the Rhine Fire. Uh-huh. And so my neighbor Joe Clark, who's 90 years old, coached Steve when he was there. And he told me, Mike, I hope he don't play in the secondary because he's going to get beat like a drum. But you're talking about a guy that can play on special teams. It's Steve Gleason. And the fight he's given, I mean, is remarkable, you know, and what he's done so much for the research for ALS and just his meaning to the community. And even when you see him now, you know, he'll always sort of type something to tell you, just try to get you at ease with him and to see him play. And you know what was funny last night? Not a big thing about Drew Brees.
Yeah.
Think about that. You know, in today's game, when you watch a Saints game, everybody makes a big thing about Drew. And back then, you know, it wasn't about Drew so much. It was about Deuce. And, you know, we teasing Deuce about he looked in good shape last night, which he was. You know, Deuce can't run the 100-yard sprints anymore. But if he could, we would have to. It would be a lot easier to time him. Like I told him, listen, my watch don't. I don't know if it goes that far. But Deuce and Reggie, and you know, we saw a young Marcus Colston in there, and Sean, and it was so much about the city being brought back, but it wasn't the big thing about Drew. And you know how. Look at that. He's the only one left, still playing.
I was surprised that was his debut at home for the Saints, and it was Peyton's debut at home for the Saints, too.
Yeah, it sure was. And, man, we had been to camp in Mississippi, and good gracious, it was, man, that was a real tough camp. And Sean basically gutted the roster. It was 28 new faces on a 53-man roster. He had gutted it. And I always tell this to Sean, that I think it was the best coaching job he ever did. The Saints the year before had been 3-13. He took that team to the NFC Championship game.
Mm-hmm.
They got beat by the Bears, but he took them to the NFC Championship game that year. Just remarkable. When you have that much changeover, and yet he was able to piece it all together, and It was great to watch him, and brought so many smiles to people's face to see the Saints back up at it and how well they had played and everything else. And I even told this to Coach Miles because they had won the national championship, that as much as LSU winning the national championship, the Saints being back was different, you know. And I don't think he quite got it. I don't think he quite understood that, you know, that. You know, for people here, you know, there are people that pull for LSU but are really Saints fans, and there are people that love the LSU and they like the Saints. But to have everything happen in that manner, it was remarkable to see. I was glad I was able to watch, you know, the game and see it from that. And as I was telling you, Jimmy, that it was a different perspective from being in that press box that night and watching it, you know, last night on television.
What was the dome like when Gleason blocked that punt and the Saints scored a touchdown?
I've only heard it that loud one other time, and that was when DeMario Davis intercepted the pass in the NFC Championship loss to the Rams. It was so loud against the Rams that cement was falling from the rafters onto the concrete below. People were cutting up that bad. And that's the only other sound that I've heard was even close. And we had a great view of it from where we were. We were literally right in front, and you could see Steve go right through. And, I mean, he couldn't have missed it. And I would always tease him about it. Steve, you couldn't have missed that. You know, and he would always say, well, I did this, I did that to maneuver around. I said, come on, dude, he gave you an open shot. You got right in. And he would always laugh. Yeah, he said, you're right about it. But he said, man, it sounds better my way, Mike. Come on, it sounds better my way. And but it's the second loudest sound. Or it's a 1A, 1B with Davis's interception in the first quarter of the NFC Championship game 2 years ago. I mean, that was really loud too, but man, the place just erupted and stayed that way for a long time. Almost disbelief of, you know, he had gotten through, and it was almost like a movie script, you know, that's how you would write it. And it was really loud too when Devery took the double reverse and scored. Because, you know, people would have said, oh, Sean's getting too cute with that, double reverse, all this and that. Man, it worked to perfection. And it was pretty loud then, too. And you just sat there and said, man, is this the same team that I covered a year ago that won 3 games? You know, you were amazed. But Steve was such a great special teams guy. He gave you everything he had. And so he knew, I think pretty quickly that was an – I think looking back in perspective, you see what it did. I think Steve knew it that night in talking to him, that he knew that was a huge play to take this team from being the Aints to back to the Saints and respectability.
As you've been talking about with Jimmy, there was so much that goes into that game at that point in time that isn't about what also stands as just such chapters in history for Sean Payton, for Drew Brees. But considering how important it was for just the area to feel like they were as close to back to normal as they had been in some time, would it have mattered who they were playing, or does the fact that it was the Falcons make this as special and historic a night as it is in Saints history?
John, that's an easy answer. People here hate the Falcons.
Right.
That's an easy one. Man, listen, they might dislike the Cowboys, and they might dislike the Rams. No, the hatred for the Falcons is at the highest level.
Right.
And so beating Atlanta, and the thing about it is, Mike Vick had great success against the Saints. And that I remember doing the pregame, Bobby J and I, and we were talking about, man, the scary thing is that Vick had been so effective against the Saints and given them so many problems defensively. And, you know, you sort of thought, oh, goodness, you know, they had won the first two games of the year on the road. Here's Vick in town. And Vick and Algie Crumpler were the two guys that really gave the Saints a lot of issues. Warrick done, too. But Warrick gave them a lot more trouble when he was in Tampa than he did in Atlanta. And we didn't know where this was going to go. But the emotions of that first quarter, they rode through. And almost the Falcons looked like a fighter that had gotten hit and never recovered the entire fight. But, yeah, it meant a lot that they beat Atlanta's backside with it. Man, you know, because people here, they still, you can buy cakes now. You know, you can go to the grocery store. And still today, you can buy cakes there. Never forget, 28-3, Falcons, Patriots.
Yeah, I love the fact that that goes on back and forth. The Falcons the other day were tweeting one of those pick three picture quizzes that it's like whether it be three great helmets or three of your favorite fast food. But anyhow, the Saints tweet back at the Falcons quiz, we'll take 2, 8, and 3. And it's just like day in, day out. It doesn't matter what day of the week it is, what time of the year it is. They do not miss any opportunities to bring that home to the attention of the Falcons.
No, they stick it to them one way or another. Just like when the Saints got beat in the NFC Championship game, man, the Falcons fans let loose, you know, on how it ended. But I went to Rouse's supermarket last week, and they still have, you know, cakes in the cake aisle. A part of it in the frozen food section. I looked down there, and sure enough, they got a cake, 28-3. Never forget. No, in the world, no, come on. I mean, they got coronavirus all over the place here, and people are still worried about that 28-3 that lead they had against the Patriots. But that goes to show you. I asked the lady behind the counter, I said, how many can you sell? She said, Mike, as soon as we make them, we sell them.
Wow. Did want to ask just a quick comment, thought. I know that this gentleman played for several teams, but I always thought of Tom Dempsey with the 63-yard field goal for the Saints. Unfortunately, he passed away within the last week, and I was just wondering if you would share a memory or two of yours of him.
Man, Tom and I, we go back a long way. Man, I was a kid, listened to it on the radio, and then you would figure that this could only happen to the Saints. The Saints radio network got the generator, bees attacked it. If you were listening on the radio that day, you did not hear the kick. You heard the play before. You heard the play that Kilmer throws the pass to Al Dodd. And Jimmy, you want to tell him where Al Dodd went to college?
Northwestern State Demon.
And Al set it up with a great catch. And we hearing Tom Dempsey's walking on the field. You know, Al Wester, you know, people remember him as the voice of Notre Dame radio. But Al did Saints games. And so, you know, we hear, you know, Dempsey's on the field. All of a sudden it kills. Nothing. And so it's like, you know, what the hell's going on? But Bees actually had got to the generator, and if you're a Saints fan, you didn't hear it on the radio. Actually, I remember seeing it at the end of an NFC game that was playing that day. because it was blacked out. You had the blackouts back then. Mm-hmm. And so they said it at the end of the broadcast, Tom Dempsey had hit a 63-yard field goal to beat the Lions. And Tom was such a humble guy. We probably did 36 shows, radio, a couple TV shows together. And he was a humble guy. He didn't want to be remembered for the 63-yard field goal. He like he said, that was just a moment in time. But what he wanted to be remembered for as a player was that he was a good teammate. And he said, Mike, I played 11 years in the NFL. Mm-hmm. How many people can say that? You know, and he never looked at himself as handicapped with the half foot, you know, fingers on one hand. He never looked at that way. Just a great guy on and off the field, a jokester. There ain't nothing he wouldn't have done to play a joke. And he thought he had good stories until he started doing shows with Bobby J and I. And all I can tell you is he told me, if I had 20 in blackjack, y'all beat me every time. No way, he said, I can trump any of those stories that happened. But I'll tell you the quick story that happened with him on that play. The Saints had just fired their head coach, Tom Fierce. J.D. Roberts, it was his first game as head coach. And J.D. always wanted to take credit for he was the guy, but Tom always says J.D. did not make that call. It actually was the Saints running backs coach, Don Heinrich. Years ago, you guys might remember, Don used to put out a college and pro football magazine. And he was the voice of the Washington Huskies football team. And Don was the running backs coach. And he's hearing the Saints staff say, let Billy Kilmer throw the ball deep downfield and take our shot. And Heinrich was, no, 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 no. Let Stumpy kick it. And Dempsey had kicked before longer field goals in practice and in pregame, but never in a real game. And so Heinrich tells him, Stumpy, get out there and go kick it. Go get out there and go kick it. And he said, J.D. was, okay, that's what we're going to do. That's what we're going to do. Let's give him a kick. And Dempsey said, the only thing Heinrich told him as I walked on the field, he said, Heinrich told him, hey, Stumpy, relax. It ain't nothing. And give it a ride. And so Dempsey was, okay. He said, I only told my holder this, Joe Scarpatti. He said, I'm going to take an extra step back to give myself a little bit more momentum. And he said, I took an extra step. And if you watch the film, he sort of stutter steps up to the ball because he was so used to the rhythm that broke his rhythm a little bit. And he said, you know, everybody talks about the sound. He said, Mike, I never heard it. I knew I hit it square. And he said, my biggest concern was getting it over the line of scrimmage. He said, you know, if I could get it over, because you got to hit it low. He said, I wanted to get it over the top. He said, I knew I could kick it that far. I didn't know if I could kick it that straight. So he says, I hit it, and he said, I go through my motions, I look up, and he said, the ball looked as though it had been suspended in the air. You know, like he said, the ball had helium in it. And he said, it just kept and going. And he said, I just turned to the side a little bit, and he said, out of the corner of my eye, I see a guy jump up and throw his hands up. And he said, then I heard the roar of the crowd. And Tulane Stadium was half full. They had a good crowd that day, but a lot of people, as Jimmy can tell you, they wanted to leave early to get out of Dodge, you know, trying to beat that traffic. And he said, you know, the crowd just erupted. And he said, I got mobbed. And Dempsey's story is, I've had about a million people tell me, Tom, I was in Tulane Stadium that day. He said, damn, I didn't think they had that many stands, seats in the stands to seat all those people at that time. But it was funny how that particular part, that it wasn't the head coach that made the call. It was actually the running backs coach, who had basically taken over the offense. Don Heinrich had taken it over at that time. But Stumpy told me he had kicked 66 in a 68-yarder in practice in Denver. He said they had practiced in Denver one day, and he said, man, in that light air, he said, man, I hit one at 66, and he said, I cleared it by 3 yards. So he said, I took a couple steps back, and he said, I hit one 68, and he said, I cleared it by a yard and a half.
Wow.
Man. But we'll miss him. He was at the Lambeth House. He was in a nursing facility since 2013. The last show he did with us in 2012, you could tell his short-term memory wasn't there. But he could tell you, you know, I've got a mom who's 89 like this. Short-term, she can't tell you what she ate for breakfast, but she can tell you stuff that happened 55 years ago like it was yesterday. And that was Tom. He could recall things that had happened long ago but couldn't tell you kind of what happened then. And he had started to repeat, which is also a trait of it. But he was a good soul. Man, he was a good guy. And we're going to miss him. I'm good friends with his wife and his kids. And he was just a gentle guy in life. You go see him at the Lambeth House. And his daughter would always tell me, Mikey doesn't recognize you by face. Talk to him. So I was like, Tom, what's going on? He was like, the radio guy. he knew the voice. He didn't know the face, but he knew the voice.
Hey, Mike, thank you so much for joining us. Really do appreciate it. Thanks for reliving the Saints-Falcons game and other things. And hopefully we'll have a chance to get you on again sometime in the near future.
Appreciate it, guys. Y'all take care. God bless.
Thank you.
You as well.
Mike Dettillier, NFL draft analyst from the New Orleans area.
Joining us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline, Sports Talk continues on 99.1, the Sports Animal.
I know it's hard to keep up,
but we ain't slowing down. 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We've been making our way through all the comments from Tennessee football coach Jeremy Pruitt from last Friday's Zoom teleconference. So here is part three of his comments from last week.
Jeremy, also on the recruiting element, if you guys end up being unable to have your summer camps, how does that change the process of building a class and the evaluation process?
I think it's very similar to what's going on in the NFL. I don't know how many prospects it is that go to the NFL combine. Some of them work out, some of them don't, some of them do some things and don't do others. So they really probably have to go back, and they have to look at what's on tape. They have to go back and trust their scouts and the scouting department from their evals to when they saw practices. Very similar to us. We have to gather as much information as we can so we can move forward and understand, hey, because you have to have a board. You have to say, okay, here's the quarterbacks that we're looking at. Here's where they're at. Here's the defensive backs. Here's the kickers. Here's the centers, the tackles, the guards. So we have a plan of how we stack our boards, how we evaluate the things that we're looking for. So we just have to do a really good job to gather the information and make good decisions and trust our evals.
All right, Coach, we got time for a few more here. Let's go to Austin Price. You there?
Hey, Coach. I know we always talk about attrition with the football team or basketball team each year. You know, how do you think that this has affected a kid that maybe wanted to go through spring practice, see where he is on the depth chart, and then make a decision about his future? And then how do you think this has impacted grad transfers that are, you know, out there wanting to take visits and now can't and really don't have a football home?
Well, it's definitely unusual circumstances. I know for us, we got a team full of guys that want to be here, and I'm excited about that. You know, from a grad transfer standpoint, most of these guys at grad transfer, they probably know where they're going before they ever enter the portal. I don't know that, you know, how much of an effect it will have on that. I guess it's something we'll just have to see as we move forward.
All right, Coach, we'll go to Vince.
Coach, you mentioned it a little bit earlier about some guys staying and doing rehab and guys being spread out around the country, but did any of your guys have difficulty either getting back home or any unusual circumstances with any of your players? Because I know a number of those spring coaches talked about, especially with the international players, trying to get them back home was a little bit of a challenge.
No, our guys they got to where they needed to be, and you know, that's one of the reasons that we check on them daily to make sure, because circumstances are changing throughout our country. So it's another reason we have daily communication with our guys to make sure that just from a health and wellness that them and their family are fine.
All right, Coach, we'll go back to David Ubbin.
Jeremy, Alabama has been using Apple Watches to keep track of their guys, just kind of various uses for that. I wonder what your thoughts were on that, or if you guys are doing anything similar with the strength staff.
Well, I'm not very familiar with that. I know what we're doing. And, you know, right now it's you know, you can't mandate anything for your guys to do. But our guys are looking for guidance and instruction and creativity on things that they can do. And that's something that our guys put out every day. And it's something I look every day. There's schools all over the country that are doing it. And it's interesting looking at these things. And I think it probably speaks volumes to our staff and other staffs out there that the creativity that they've come up with in this unusual time.
All right, Coach has time for one more. Anybody? All right, we'll go to Blake.
Hey, Jeremy. We're seeing some athletic departments and coaching staffs, coaches and administrators taking a one-year pay cut to cover some of the lost revenue through this. Have you been approached about that? And I guess if it did come to that, how would you feel about that?
No, I've not. Not been approached about that. It's unusual times right now, and it's affecting everybody in our country. And you know, I just to start this whole deal, you know, people not being having an opportunity to work, and it's things that are really out of our control. And there's definitely from our standpoint at the University of Tennessee, we're very sensitive to these situations, which goes back again to why we check in every day with our players and their families, just to see exactly what their situation is.
All right, Trey, you had one more question, I think, if you want to get it in.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Bill. Jeremy, what kind of communication do you have with Philip Fulmer and also the SEC? Are you guys holding any kind of meetings every other day to discuss potentially what's going on in the conference and you know, again, the communication with Philip Fulmer about some of the obstacles y'all will have to overcome?
Well, I talk to Coach Fulmer usually daily and some days multiple times. And, you know, as far as throughout the SEC, there's a group of us coaches that, that are on a, text message, so we share information and you know, hey, we all want the same things, right? We're all pulling for finding a way to find answers for this virus and you know, and we're all very much aware of what's going on throughout our cities, our state, and our countries, and you know, We're all just hoping to help find a way.
All right, Teresa, this is the last one. I know, Teresa, you had your hand up. So, Teresa, AP, last question.
Coach, real quickly, with this would have been spring practice. How are you and your coaches communicating the playbook with your players? Are you trying to, you know, keep to something of a schedule with the limitations of internet and computer access at this point?
Well, this is the first week that we've been able to do any football. You know, a lot of it for us is health and wellness checks, and we're finding a way to implement some football, you know, on the days that we have those calls. And I think it's good for the players. It's something that they want. You know, it's good for them to stay in contact with each other. It's It's something that kind of draws everybody to this game, the game of football. It's so team oriented, and it takes everybody to have a successful team. And you know, this is one of those times during spring ball that that's where you're trying to create the identity of your football team. And we don't really have an opportunity to do that per se on the field, but we have a chance to do that in other ways. And that's something that we're working hard to do.
Comments from Tennessee football coach Jeremy Pruitt. We'll get a break. A final segment to today's edition of Sports Talk is next on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
If you smell something, that's probably us. We are 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Final segment to today's edition of Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams.
And John, I do want to mention quickly, the Mississippi State AD, John Cohen, had said that he is going to expand Mike Leach's cultural awareness of the state of Mississippi after that tweet that he sent out a while back. So Mike Leach learning the ropes around the state of Mississippi. How about that? And the Wooden Players of the Year, Anaseki and Obi Toppin win the Wooden National Player of the Year awards.
So he has to learn the ropes of Mississippi? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Goodness gracious. That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We say thank you to all our guests. We say thank you to our callers. And we say thank you most of all to you for listening. That's going to do it for today's edition of Sports Talk. Have a great night.